Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Yevamos Daf Lamed Zayin. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur 14 lines from the top of Daf Lamed Zayin. Before we begin the Gemara itself, we glance at the side under our nosei, our topic heading, where we read the following: B'matziv, in a situation, shall Safek ben Zayin l'sheni ben Tisha l'rishon. In a case where a woman becomes a widow and marries the Yavam, and after 7 months bears a child. Is this child, we should point out that the Yavam did not wait the required 3 months in order to establish whether or not she was pregnant. So after 7 months, there is a doubt. Is this a full-term pregnancy, a 9-month pregnancy? Hence, it would be the child of the first husband. And if that be the case, then Yibum was out of the question. Or maybe it's a 7-month child born to the Yavam. Lomo loyam rinon haloich achar horoiv. Why do we not say that we should simply follow the majority, v'have ben shel rishon? Hames, it's the son of the first husband, the brother that died. The rov nashim letisha yoldos. Most women bear their children after a 9-month pregnancy. So the question comes up, as we said, why are we even entertaining the thought that it's a 7-month pregnancy with the yavam? In the Mishnah, we should point out that when this issue came up, the 7-month pregnancy, so the Mishnah had said that it's they separate, and the child is kosher, and they're chayav and oshem toli. The oshem toli reflected an element of doubt. But here we don't have doubt. If you follow the majority, so the required sacrifice would be a korban chatos, a sin offering when the sin is clear. And if you follow the rov, the child is a child of the deceased husband, and the yavam should not have married her whatsoever. So now we turn to the Gemara. Sofek ben Tisha v'chulei, and then the Mishnah said v'chayovim ba'osham tolui. The required korban was a korban brought when in doubt concerning an aveira, a sin that would involve a chiyuv kores. Omar le Rava l'Rav Nachman, lema, why not say haloch acha roiv noshim, follow the majority of women, v'roiv noshim l'tisha yaldan. And the majority of women bear children only after 9 months. So that this would be a child of the first husband, and the Yavam definitely did an Avera, and let the Korban Chatos be brought based on his having had relations with an Eish Esav, Shelo B'Mokel Mitzvah, a sister-in-law, where there is no Yibum Mitzvah involved. Omar Lei, so Rav Nachman responds, Noshi didan l'shiva yoldan. Our women give birth after 7 months. Omar Lei, Rava says back, Noshi didchu havu ruba diama. Are your women representative of the majority of the world? Now we continue with an answer. Rav Nachman answers, and it's a long answer. Take note of the fact that as part of this long answer, there's a bracketed section. where the contents of the brack section is language is not accurate, and the Gemara refurbishes it. So initially, we'll skip the bracketed section, and let's see Rav Nachman's answer. Omar le, hochi ko amino. This is what I mean. Roiv noshim yoldon letisha. The majority of women give birth after 9 months. Umiut l'shiva, a minority of women give birth after a mere 7 months. And here we skip the brackets. Roiv hayoledis letisha, the majority of women that give birth after 9 months, and again we emphasize the majority of women that give birth after 9 months, ubra nikur lishlish yomeha. The pregnancy, the fetus, is recognizable after a third of the period, after 3 months. V'hai midolo hukur lishlish yomeha, and the case featured in the Mishnah is a case where the Vlad, where the child was not recognizable after a third of the time period. So Isra le Ruba, that weakens the Rove, and we therefore come to the conclusion that it's quite possible that it's not a 9 month pregnancy, but rather a 7 month pregnancy. From and hence a child of the second husband having done a real full-fledged yibum. It would seem to me what the Gemara just described is a situation that even though he didn't wait 3 months to marry her, however, 3 months went by since the death of the brother, the deceased brother, 3 months went by, and the Vlad, the pregnancy, was not recognizable. So, since after 3 months, since the brother's death, the pregnancy was still not recognizable, it arouses the thought that this is a 7 month pregnancy, and hence it's a child of the second husband. Now, let's go over the bracketed section. Rav Nachman said that I acknowledge that most women give birth after 9 months and a minority give birth after 7 months. V'chol, and we're reading now in the brackets, emphasis on this word v'chol, and all, v'chol hayoledes letisha, all women that give birth after 9 months, ubra nikur l'shlish yomea. The child is recognizable after 3 months. V'zu, and the case here of the Mishnah, Hayovelo Huku Ubra Lishlishomeha, since the Vlad was not recognizable after 3 months. 3 months, as we said before, 3 months, let us say, after the husband died, the child was still not recognizable. Isra Le Ruba, the Rove is weakened. In other words, to ascribe this woman to a 9 month pregnancy is weakened. The Gemara asks, if this language is correct, I kol hayoledes letisha ubra nikur lishlish yomea, if that were so, that every single woman that gives birth after 9 months, the child is recognizable after 3 months, ha midolo hukur lishlish yomea, in this case, that the child was not recognizable after 3 months, ubra vadai bar shiva levasrohu, then the child is definitely the product of a 7 month pregnancy resulting from the second husband, from the brother, from the Yovam. And she was legitimately married by him. And there'd be no need for a korban whatsoever. And yet the Mishnah speaks about the need for a korban. Elo emo, rather, to speak more accurately, roiv hayoledes letisha ubra nikur lishlish yomeh. The majority of 9 month pregnancies are recognizable after 3 months. V'hai midolo hukur lishlish yomeh. And in our case, the Mishnah's case, where after 3 months since the brother's demise, the pregnancy was not recognizable, so Isra le Ruba, the majority is weakened, so she would fit. So we don't ascribe her to the majority, and hence a doubt is created. Tanu Rabbanan. We have a Tanaic source that continues with the issue of child born, and we're not sure who the father is. Is it the first brother, or the deceased's child, or the Yavam's child? Tanu Rabbanan, Rishon Roy Liois Kohen Gadol. The first child born, either way you look at things, is fit to be, and this is a figure of speech, but he's totally kosher. He'd be, if he were the son of Kohanim, so he would be fit to be even the Kohen Gadol. Either way you look at things, meaning if he's a 9-month pregnancy, so a legitimate child from the deceased husband. And if it's a 7-month pregnancy, so it's a legitimate child of the Yavam, the first husband having left no other children. Vesheni Mamzer Misofek. The second child that's born, if this Yavam, if he continues with her, it's true the Mishnah said they must separate, but if a second child is born, so he's called a Mamzer Misofek. Rabbi Lezer ben Yankov Omer, Ein Mamzer Misofek. Now this source is not 100% clear. What is meant by a Mamzer Misofek? What is Rabbi Lezer trying to accomplish when he says there is no such thing as a Mamzer or as a Sofek Mamzer? In order to deal with this source, we have a machloikis, Abaye and Rava. On the side of the Gemara under the Mivneh heading, you can see a triangle. These are gishos, the approaches of Abaye and Rava. Lahasbir hodomar Rav Elozer ben Yankov ein mamzer misofek. What did Rav Elozer ben Yankov mean when he says there's no mamzer misofek? My Komar. As we said, this source needs explanation. How can Rabbi Elozer ben Yankov say that there's no doubt? What do you mean there's no doubt? We see a woman that didn't wait her required 3 months, married the Yavam, 7 months later a child is born. How can you say that the second child born after that is not a Safek? Of course there's a suffix. If this child, the first child, was a 9-month pregnancy from the first husband, then the Yavam that married her now should not have married her. And if he did, any children that he produces with her are going to be Mamzerim. Let's continue. Omar Abaye, Hochi Komar. Rishon Roy Leos Kohen Gadol. So Abaye says, let's read the source thusly. The first child is fit to be a Kohen Gadol, as we explained. There's no question about that first child. Vesheni, if that Yavam continues living with her, Sofek Mamzer, the Osir B'Mamzeres, a second child to be born, is categorized as a possible Mamzer. Once again, if the first child was a 9-month pregnancy, then this Yavam shouldn't have continued living with her and bearing children. So that child, if the first child was a 9-month pregnancy, the second child is a possible Mamzer. If the first child was a 7-month pregnancy, so then this would not be any problem. But we don't know. Hence, it's a Safek Mamzer. And the Tanakhama says he cannot marry a mamzeres, a woman who is definitely a mamzeres. A mamzer is someone who results from a union of people that are usur, that are forbidden to one another. And certainly, if their union would carry with it a penalty of kores, so the child produced in almost all cases, except for nida, the child produced would be called a mamzer. So the second child from the Yavam who married the Yavama within 3 months, the second child that he bears is called a Safek Mamzer, as we explained already at length. That child, according to the Tanakhama, cannot marry a Mamzeres, a girl who is definitely a Mamzeres. Rabbi Elozer ben Yankov Oimer, Eino Safek Mamzer, Ela Vadai Mamzer, Umutur b'Mamzeres. He is not considered like a suffik, he's considered like a vadai. When he says here el vadai mamzer, it's like a vadai mamzer, and halachically speaking, that classifies him as mutter, as being allowed to marry a mamzeres. Rashi takes pains to explain this. V'sheni mamzer vadai. Actually, let's see. Reb Lozer Omer ein mamzer misofek elo kevadai mamzer have umuter b'mamzeres de kosovar sveikon bevadon muter. That's Rashi's presentation of Reb Lozer, that we don't consider him like a suffolk, but rather like a definite mamzer, even though technically he is a suffolk, he is a doubt, but we consider him halachically, legally, like a definite mamzer, and he is mutter to marry a mamzeres. He can marry another one like him. And Reb Lozer is of the opinion that doubtful ones can marry with definite mamzerim. For those who might not be familiar, these illegitimate children, and illegitimate in Judaism is in this context of child born through a union of people that are highly forbidden to be with one another, as we explained, to the tune of a kores level offense. There are other opinions in Tanoim on this topic, but we're using the common accepted opinion. Continuing in the Gemara, Rava Omar, Hochi Ko Omar, Rishon Roy Lios Kohen Godol. And this has been the same throughout. Visheni, the second child born, Mamzer Vadai Misofik, Umuter Bemamzeres. Since he is like a Sofek, or since he is a Sofek, we view him as if he's a Vadai Mamzer and allowed to marry a Mamzeres. This is Rava's presentation of the Tana Kama. This is the opposite, if you will, of Abaye's presentation of the Tana Kama. So Rava's presentation of the Tana Kama were lenient for this particular Sofek character. For Reb Elozer ben Yankov Omer, Ein Vadai Mamzer Misofek, Ela Sofek Mamzer, the Osir B'Mamzeres. And here Rava presents Reb Elozer ben Yankov as being strict, restrictive, similar to Abaye's presentation of his Tana Kama. Now, the Gemara makes a point. There's a long point here. V'Komifligi B'Derebi Elozer. Abaye and Rava, in dealing with Reb Elozer ben Yankov, is he restrictive or is he lenient? So their machlokas is dependent on Reb Elozer, as we will see now, and it takes quite a bit of Gemara in order to develop the theme, what they their machlokas, Abaye and Rava, are based on. But in order to focus the discussion, we can focus on Reb Elozer ben Yankov. Is he restrictive or is he lenient with regard to how to deal with a sofek mamzer? So we continue. V'komiflegi b'derebi Elozer. Abaye and Rava are arguing within Reb Elozer, not to be confused, by the way, with the Tana Rebbe Eliezer ben Yankov. Disnan Reb Elozer Omer. Vadon b'vadon muter. Definite mamzerim are muter with other definite mamzerim. Vadon b'sveikon, u'sveikon b'vadon, u'sveikon b'sveikon osir. However, where you have any other combination, a sofek mamzer with a vadai, or even two sofek mamzerim, they cannot marry one another. Now, two sofek mamzerim cannot marry one another because we say sofek about the fellow. Let's say he is a real mamzer. The girl, the woman, as a suffix, she might be totally kosher. So we can't have them mating. V'elu hein sveikon. And the following are examples of suffix mamzer. Shtuki v'asufi v'kusi. These are topics that are elaborated on in the fourth last perek of Maseches Kiddushin. So we don't want to dwell on them right now, but These are people, the Shtuki and Asufi are people who don't know who their father or both parents are. So, being that they don't know, it could be that they are the products of a mamzer situation. The Kusi, these are people that had a, let's say, questionable conversion to Judaism many years ago, and they are not makbid. They are not concerned with kiddushe, kesef, and shtar. Marriage through money and marriage through shtaros, because in order to establish that that is a form of marriage, you have to rely on the oral tradition, and they don't accept the oral tradition. And as a result, they could have someone amongst them marrying by offering money and not taking it seriously, and then that woman would go ahead and marry someone else. So, as far as we are concerned, she's an Eishes Ish. She's forbidden to be married by someone else. They are not concerned. So they, within the Kusi population, you will have Safek Mamzerim. The Omer of Yehuda Marav, Halacha Kereb Elazar. Rav rules like Reb Elazar. Now Reb Elazar is clearly on record as saying that a Safek with a Vaday is not allowed. Ki Amriso Kamei de Shmuel. This is Rav Yehuda speaking. Rav Yehuda says, when I said this over to Shmuel, in other words, I said over Rav's very restrictive psak, Omar Li, Shmuel then told me, said, wow, how can Rav paskin so rigidly when you have the following information on record? Hillel, the great Hillel, Shana, he taught the following. He introduces all different types of members of the population, Asora Yuchsin Olu Mibavel, 10 different categories of genealogy came back in the time of Ezra from Bavel, from the Babylonian exile. And who are the 10 different groups of people? Kayani, Levi, Visraeli, those are clear. Chaloli, Geri, Haruri. Chalolim are people that are born from a Kohen who marries a divorced woman. Geri are converts, Haruri are slaves that were freed, Mamzeri, Nesini, Shtuki, Vasufi. Mamzerim, that's clear, the children born from illegitimate marriages, illegal marriages, and Nesini is a reference to the Nesinim. These are people that don't keep the oral tradition. They were part of the group of people that converted in the time of Yehoshua. And Shtuki Vasufi are people who don't know who their father or parents are. The Chulon Mutoran Lavoi Ze Boze. And all of them, now here you have to be very careful with the translation, but amongst these groups, when you subdivide them into separate groups, they can marry with one another. And Rashi explains this in detail. But what's of interest to us is the last group that Rashi mentions. If you look across from this in our marked Gemara, you see there's a little gimel in the Rashi. Geri, Haruri, Mamzeri, Unesini, Shtuki, Vasufi, Mutaron, Zeboze. That's what Hillel teaches, as Shmuel points out. And why is it that the Shtuki and Asufi, which are Safek Mamzerim, they can marry known Mamzerim, and likewise Gerim, converts, can marry Mamzerim? To Kahal Gerim lo ikri Kahal. Lefikoch Mamzerim mutaron bohen. Ukeseder azeh shnuyim bekidushin. Okay, that's giving us a little more detail than we need for right now. But according to Hillel, as Shmuel says, Sofek Mamzer can marry a Valai Mamzer. Viat Amris, we're continuing the Gemara. Viat Amris halacha k'Rabbi Elazar. And you, that's quoting Rav, as saying that the halacha shall follow Rabbi Elazar, who would restrict that. In other words, you have on the one hand Hillel that allows a Sofek to marry a Valai, and how can you choose to rule like Rabbi Elazar over the towering authority figure of Hillel, who was lenient? And now the Gemara ties this information into Abaye and Rava from before. Abaye sovar lo kishmuel, di omar halocha kihilel. Abaye accepts Shmuel, who says that you should rule like Hillel. Now that means that the halocha would be Safek is mutter with a vadai. And as a result of that, Umuki lo Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov aliba de hilchasa, he sets up Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov as holding like that. If you go back to Abaye's version of Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, he was in fact saying that a suffix is mutter with a vadai. Ki hechi delo tikshi hilchasa a hilchasa. So as to avoid having a contradiction in the rules of how to paskin halacha, how to rule halachically. So, as far as Abaye is concerned, we know that we paskin like Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov, and we also know that the halacha should follow Hillel. So if you want to make sure that the halacha, that Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov is in line with Hillel, who is this, as we said, this towering legal authority, so we set up Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov as holding like Hillel. Rava savar lo ke Rav. Rava holds that the halacha, he holds by Rav's conclusion. Diomar halacha ke Rebbe Elazar. That the halacha should follow the restrictive ruling of Rebbe Elazar. Umuki lo l'derebi Elazar ben Yaakov aliba de hilchasa. And as a result of accepting Rebbe Elazar, we want to make sure that Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov, who, when he says something, is something to be accepted, so we want to have Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov paralleling Rebbe Elazar. Ki hechi delo tikshi hilchasa. So that we don't have a contradiction in halacha principles. So just to go over this once again, according to Abaye, Abaye says that Shmuel's approach is more correct, and Shmuel preferred Hillel. So once you say that halacha is like Shmuel, that means that a suffix is going to have to be mutter with a vadai. And we know that we follow the ruling of Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov when he appears in the Tanaic sources. So we want to make sure that Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov, according to Abaye, is also lenient, allowing Safek with Vadai. Rava, on the other hand, says that the halacha is to follow Rav. And Rav ruled like Rebbe Elazar. So we want to make sure that Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov, as we said, when he appears, he is to be followed. So he has to come out saying the restrictive approach, as we saw in Rava's presentation. We continue at the top of Amud Beis. Omar Abaye Mino Amino Lo the Cholsfeiko the Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov Kevadai Mashvile. From where do I know that according to Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov, matters that are a suffake. We're talking about matters of genealogy, genealogical purity, that where a doubt arises, Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov will categorize that as a definite problem, resulting in Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov being matir, a suffek with a vadai. Tesanya, Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov Omer, Hare Shebo al Noshim Harbe. Imagine a person who is promiscuous and he has relations with lots of women. The Ain Yodea al Aza Mehan Ba, and he doesn't know which women he cohabited with. Vichain he Shibo Alao Anoshim Harbei. Likewise, from her standpoint, she was Niveles, she had intimacy with many men. The Aina Yodas Mezamen Kibla, and she doesn't know from whom she became pregnant. If you're in a situation like that, Nimtza Av Nosei Esbito V'ach Nosei Esachoso, you'll end up a man marrying his daughter and not knowing that, and a brother marrying his sister not knowing that they are brother and sister. V'nismale kol ha'olam kulo mamzerim. And the world becomes filled up with mamzerim. Now we have to emphasize here that you're dealing with a situation of doubt. In other words, this could be. And yet, Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov is saying, these are mamzerim. So you have a situation of something that's a suffix being called a definite mamzer. V'al zeh ne'emar, and regarding this situation, Umola ha'aretz zima. The world is filled with promiscuity and with immorality. So that Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov is telling us that a suffek is like a vadai, and hence a suffek is mutter with a vadai. That was Abaye's approach, and hence this is why Abaye quoted this. Now, the Rava Amarlach, from Rava's standpoint, though, Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov doesn't say that a suffek is like a vadai. So he will tell you, Hochi Ko'omar, the pasuk that Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov quoted, is indicative of mere doubt. The word zima in the pasuk, Zumahi. All it indicates is that, literally, she, who is she? We don't know if she is a vadai. We don't know. It's a suffix. In other words, we have a doubt. So that Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov, as far as Rava is concerned, is not saying that that which is a doubt is considered like a vadai. As we go on in the Gemara, we have a marking that draws our attention to the note on the side under the Mivneh. Oid midivrei Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov beinyonei ishus. More comments of his regarding matters of marriage. Yeser al kain Omar Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov. Furthermore, Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov said, Rashi explains on the third line from the top, Yeser al kain dafilu hocha da'al yedei nisuin have vadover mufursam gozar Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov. Up till now, we saw Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov talking about a world of promiscuity. This is a cohabitation without matrimony. Here, we will speak about marriage. Things are known, and yet Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov is opposed. So, we continue. Yeser al kain, even more so, Omar Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov, lo yisaldem isha b'medina zu, v'yelich v'yisa isha b'medina acheres. A man should not legitimately marry a woman in one area, one region, and then go and marry a woman in another region. Shemo yizdavgu zeh lo zeh, the children of these two unions might end up meeting one another someday. V'nimtzaach nosei esachoso, and the result would be a brother is marrying his sister. The Gemara asks, Amy, is that really so? The Ha Rav, here we have two incidents with Rav and next one with Rav Nachman, whose names we squiggle underline, don't seem to be bound by Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov's restriction. The Ha Rav, ki ikla ledar dashir, Rav, when he traveled from his home and went to the community of Dar dashir, Machriz v'omar, he would announce before his arrival, Man Havya Layoima, who will be my wife for a day? Rav Nachman ki ikla l'shachantziv, when Rav Nachman would visit the community of Shachantziv, and I think that we have to note that these are communities that are distant from where they lived. So Rav had a wife in his own community, and now he's going to have a wife in Dar dashir. Rav Nachman had a wife in his own community, and now he's going to have a wife in Shachantziv. So when he would plan a visit to Shachantziv, Machriz v'yomar, he would announce ahead of time, Man havi l'yom, who will marry me for a day? So, as a result of these called wife for a day marriages, children might result. And the child that was born in Dar dashir might one day meet the a child of the opposite gender in Rav's own location. Likewise with Rav Nachman, a child born in Shachantziv might one day end up meeting a child born in Rav Nachman's own locale. And they didn't seem to be bothered by the chashash of Ach Noisei Asachos, a brother marrying a sister. The Gemara answers, Shaini Rabbonan, the case involving these great rabbinic figures like Rav and Rav Nachman is different. Depakia Shmayu, their names are very well known, which means that a child born from a union involving Rav or Rav Nachman, the child will be associated with them. So that a child born from the wife for a day in Dardashir from Rav, that child will be known as Rav's son. And obviously the daughter of Rav in his own location is known as Rav's daughter, so they will know to avoid one another. Now, we didn't explain in the context of our Gemara what do we mean by wife for a day and why did they do that. That's discussed elsewhere. We can say briefly that these men were very pious and wanted to avoid any even thoughts, let alone actions, avoid any thoughts of immorality, so that when they're visiting a location and they're away from their wives, so as to avoid any element of impurity, they would arrange to have a second wife waiting for them in the place that they're visiting. The Gemara asks a technical question, but how does this even work? They're having a wife prepared for them in these locations. Rav is going to come to Dardashir, Rav Nachman is going to come to Shachantziv, and he's going to say, who wants to be my wife for a day? How is that going to result in even their uniting with one another? V'amar Rava, Tavu Ali Nose, when a man seeks out the consummation of a marriage with a woman, V'nispaisa, and she agrees, they must observe, the woman must observe 7 clean days because of the emotional feelings as a result of being sought out to consummate their marriage. There's a fear that she might have a nida, a menstrual release, and she's forbidden to her husband. So Rav and Rav Nachman arriving in town and announcing who will be my wife, and some woman agrees, that's Nispaisa, she agrees, she's suspect of experiencing a blood release because of the emotion, the being overcome with emotion, she won't be able to live, they won't be able to cohabit. So how does the whole scenario of a child being born from that wife for a day even get started? The Gemara answers, 2 answers. Number 1, Rabbonon Shluchayu Havu Mishadri. The Rabbonon Rav and Rav Nachman, knowing that they were going to visit these locations, they would send agents ahead of time, making this announcement and acquiring a woman for them 7 days ahead of time. So the woman would experience the emotional charge and the nida release of blood, and when the rabbi came a week later, she was already tahora, she was already purified and could cohabit with him. Let's read that line again. Rabbonon shluchayu havu mishadri umodi lehu. They would send agents ahead of time, and they would arrange already for the marriage, and the woman at that point would have been overcome with the emotional charge. And 7 days later, when the rabbi arrives, they're already able to have relations. The Iboy Asema, another approach to this whole, to the story of, in light of Rava's claim that Tavu Elinos in Espaisa, Tzricha Shiva Nikim, what would Rav and Rav Nachman have accomplished by coming to town? And here we're taking an approach other than the agent sent ahead. but rather the rabbis arriving initially, you know, there. How would marrying these women help in light of Rava's point? So the second approach is the Rabbonin Yehudi Ba'amahu the Miyachdi Lahu. Women would be chosen for them to be their wife, and they would not cohabit. It's enough, though, that they would know that they have women that had agreed to marry them. D'yomar mar, eino doime mi sheyesh lo pas besalo, l'mi she'ein lo pas besalo. We have to just remind ourselves of what this whole wife for a day was trying to accomplish. It was trying to quiet the impure thoughts that a man might have concerning women, but that wouldn't be the case if he has a wife that's designated for him. So that the Iboy Esemo is telling us, and we have to translate what we read, that Eino Doima Mishiesh Lo Pas Besalo, you can't compare someone that has bread in his basket, Lemisha Ein Lo Pas Besalo, as opposed to someone that doesn't have bread in his basket. The idea being that the rabbis who knew that there was a woman that would marry them, that was enough to quiet, to quell any possible thoughts concerning women, any impure thoughts, even if you're talking about a situation where the day they arrived, they wouldn't have been able to cohabit with them. The goal still would be accomplished, them knowing that there was a woman ready for them. Tana, Rav Elazar ben Yaakov Omer, Lo yisa adam ishtoi v'daito legarsha. A person should not marry a woman with the intention of divorcing her. Mishum shenemar, as the Pasuk says, Al techrash areach hara v'yoshev lebetach itoch. You shouldn't scheme evil to your friend when he thinks he is comfortable with you. So that if one marries a woman creating the thought that they're going to be a couple for till death do them part, and he is thinking, oh, I'll marry her and I'll divorce her after I marry her, that would be a violation of this. It would appear to me that the case involving the Rabbonin is different, because there they didn't marry the women with the woman thinking that she was going to remain a wife for him permanently. That is what Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov was talking about. They already at the outset said, who would be my wife for a day? So as far as those women were concerned, for them, let us just assume that it was such an honor for them to be considered the wife of these great rabbis, even if it's for one day, that they agreed very willingly to that plan. But a woman who thinks she's being married for a marriage that would be a lasting, permanent marriage, at the time that the husband is scheming already to divorce her, that would be a violation of Al Techa Shareacha Ra. As we continue in the Gemara of the new Sukya, you can see there is quite an extensive use of markings and geometric shapes. On the side, under our Nosei Mivneh heading, the Nosei is the topic heading and the Mivneh, the structural note that we combine into one, you see diamonds and double underlines. Sidra Shel Shnayim Shebo Ladun Al, two people that are coming to litigate, Al Nechosim Shel, regarding properties of so-and-so. Before we get into the actual text, just let us survey the Gemara ahead of time. First of all, this marking scheme and, we'll say, type of discussion will continue a considerable way down, Lamed Chesamet Aleph, till the Mishnah that's more than halfway down, Lamed Chesamet Aleph. The diamond, you will see, is used along the way, and it highlights the word Suffolk. The Suffolk, of course, is our Yavam that
did not wait the required 3 months, and 7 months after he marries the Yavama, a child is born. Is this child a son, a child, an offspring of the deceased? Or is he a seven-month pregnancy coming from the Yavam, the second, the brother, the surviving brother? So that child is called a Safek, and that's who we'll be referring to throughout the sugya. So the Safek is coming to litigate, is coming to argue or claim, lay claim on property. Who is his Baldin? Who is the litigant that's confronting him? So if you look at the double underline, that is what's highlighted each time. So in the first example, you have the Safek and the Yavam, and they're coming to argue regarding, and what are they arguing about? Then you look at the triangle. In the first case, Nichse Misna, regarding the property of the deceased brother. The second example, you see the Safek and the children, other children of the Yavam, that come and litigate over the Nichse Misna, the property of the deceased. So the first two cases involve contests concerning the property of the deceased. As you continue through the Gemara, you see case number 3 is a Safek and the Vnei Yavam, but here they're arguing over a different kind of property. So that you see that cases 1 and 2 have in common the argument concerning the Nichse Misna. Cases 2 and 3 have in common the Safek and the Vnei Yavam coming to argue, but in that case over different property. And case, the fourth case, you have the Safek and the Bnei Yavam again coming to argue over still something else. The Gemara then gets into a lengthy discussion concerning case 4. Case 5, you can see on Lamed Ches Amud Aleph, where the Safek and Yavam, that's reflective of the first two cases, the first case, I should say, where the Safek and Yavam had litigated. Here you have that as well in case 5. In case 6, you have the Safek with the Bnei Yavam. And case 7, the Safek and the Yavam. And case 8, a grandfather with the Safek. In cases 7 and 8, you can see we used a slightly different type of diamond because it's, though we're highlighting the initial figure in who's coming to argue, but it's not the Safek, it's grandfather over there. Now we go into each case. Case number 1, diamond number 1, Safek v'yavam shebo lachloit b'nichse misna. The Safek and the Yavam are coming to divide, argue, contest who is the rightful owner of the property of the deceased brother. Safek Omar, the Safek will claim ano bar misnahu. Be careful, in this Gemara you'll see language in the third person, but it's really a first person expression. So it says, the Safek says, I am the son of the deceased. I'm a 9-month pregnancy child. Hence, my father is the brother that died. Unichse didihu. The properties, the Nichse Misna, they're mine. I inherit my father. The Yavam Omar, the Yavam says, At Baroi Didi At, you are my son. You were born after 7 months. The less Loch Velomidi Benichsi, you have no holding in those properties. You're my son, so you don't have any claim on my brother's properties. Have a Momon Amuto Besafik. Here we have a case of money or of property that lies in doubt. Umoman amuta besafek chokim. When you have doubt concerning ownership of property, the halacha demands splitting it. We look at Rashi in the upper part of the narrow lines. Momon hamuta besafek she'ein ze muhsik benichsi yoser mizeh.
neither one is more possessing, holding of the properties than the other. Dim ze ben hames, if this child is in fact the son of the deceased, ein liyovam behen klum, liyovam has nothing, nothing of the property. Vim ben hayovam hu, if he's the son of the yovam, ein lo behen klum, then he has nothing in it, in the property of the deceased. Hilkach, ein kan moitzi mechaveroi lahatil olov haraya, because there's another principle in settling monetary claims, and that is when I am trying to extract, remove from your possession of property, then I, as the extractor, it is upon me to bring proof to my claim. But as Rashi is explaining, you don't have someone who is a possessor so as to have the other gentleman classified as an extractor. Neither one has any stronger claim than the other in this case. So that's called Moman HaMuta B'Safik. So we have two major principles in solving monetary controversy. One is Moman HaMuta B'Safik, and with that, and in cases like that, we say divide, where there is pure doubt. Neither side has a greater claim or greater possession of it. Then we divide, as opposed to the case where one is considered in having a stronger hold on it, the other one being classified as a motzi, an extractor, and then we say it is upon him, the burden of proof is upon him. We continue with the next case. Sofek uvnei yovam shebo lachloik benichse misna. There's a little diagram that we have to the side where the star appears. There is a Reuven and Shimon were brothers. Reuven dies in this case. Shimon is a Yavam. There's a child, we don't know, he's called Suffolk, we don't know to whom he is ascribed. Is he the son of Reuven or Shimon? Shimon has other sons. They are coming to litigate over the property of Reuven. So now, let's see each one's claims. We continue in the Gemara, third wide line in the middle. Safek Omar, the Safek says, Hahu Gavra, that means that man. He's referring to himself. As we said, the use of the third person in this Gemara should be scrutinized, who is really being referred to. So the Safek says, on himself. Bar Misnahu, V'nichsi Didi Hu. I'm the son of Reuven, and hence I inherit my father Reuven. B'nei Yavam Amri, the sons of the Yavam say, At Achinu At, you are our brother. Reuven didn't have any sons. You're our brother. And we should have pointed out maybe earlier that in general, when a brother dies, the Yavam, he inherits the property of the deceased. So here, the Yavam is no longer around for our purposes. The sons of the Yavam would have inherited their father. The sons of the Yavam, in this case, the children of Shimon, are saying to the Safek, you're trying to claim all of Reuven's property for yourself on the grounds that you're Reuven's son. No, you're our brother. Umonsa hu de'is loch b'hadon. And there is, Monsa is a portion. You have a portion in that property along with us. We're all together. The Rashi, you'll notice in the upper, again, we're more or less where we left off, Safek ubnei Yavam, that's a case that we're dealing with now involving the Nifse Misna, HaSafek Mufsok Behem B'Yoyser. We want to point out that the Safek has a greater claim than the sons of the Yavam. The Mimon of Shach Islei Zechiyah B'Gavayo. Either way you look at it, he has a holding in it. Either he has a portion of it, or he has all of it. Avabinei Yavam Shemo Ein Lohem Chelek Bohem. As far as the sons of Shimon, maybe they have no holding in it, because if the Suffolk is the son of Reuven, they have nothing in that property. Shezeh Ben Rishonhu. There is a possibility, as we say, that the sons of the Yavam have no holding in, because the Suffolk might very well be the son of the first one, the dead, the Reuven in our case. Fakulu Shelo, and all of it, all the property would be his. Umishum Hachi Sov Rabbanan Lameimar, and it's because of this the Rabbanan thought to say Hainu Masnis Beperek Noisin Ala Anusa. Now, what we've done by reading this Rashi, we're giving a little bit of an introduction to the Gemara. So let's go back to the Gemara, and we'll have to pick up this Rashi a little bit later. So we saw the diagram. We saw who's arguing, who's litigating. Now the claims. Safek, we saw the claims, we're at the fifth wide line, the beginning of line, where you see a crown marking. Under the Mivneh heading on the side of the Gemara, the crown introduces Sovor Rabbonon Lememar, and the Rabbonon want to say something to Rav Mesharshia, and a couple lines later you'll see Rav Mesharshia's response to them. So now we continue in the Gemara. The beginning of the line, Sofur Rabbonon Kamei Derev Mesharshia Lememar, rabbis that were in the presence of Rav Mesharshia thought to say that this case, Masnisin, it is in fact a Mishnah. You can resolve the case from that which is taught in a Mishnah. Disnan. Now here we have a Tanaic source, and there's a little diagram that accompanies this too. You can see there's a double star, and let us emphasize, we're not talking about a case of Yibum, but we're talking about a situation where there is doubt. The case described involves children from two men, and there was a woman that had been married to Mr. One, and she didn't wait the required 3 months, and then married Mr. Two. Mr. Two has other children. Mr. One has other children. I hope everyone sees this in our chart where the double star appears. And now we continue in the Gemara. Who eino yoresh osam, v'heim yorshim oisoi, v'hocha ibcha. In that case, and actually let's go back to the Rashi now, where we left off. You can find the Rashi pretty easily by finding the double star at the point that we left off. The Rabbonon Kameder of Mesharshia thought to parallel the case that we had, case number two with the Suffolk and the Bnei Yavam and the Nichsei Misna, to this case. Let's continue with the Rashi now. We're saying that the case is similar to the that which is taught in the Perek Noisin Alo Anus. That's the name of the Perek later in this Masichta. The Katani, it teaches Sofek Ben Tisha L'Rishon, Sofek Ben Shiva L'Achron, a child that is not clear if he's the son of the first man or the son of the second man. Hu Lo Yoresh Oson Lo Zeh V'Lo Zeh. He will not inherit either side. To Bnei Rishon Matchulei Eitzel Bnei Achron, the sons of the first one will say to the Sofek, you're not one of us, you're a child of the second man. Ubnei Achron Eitzel Rishon, if the Sofek tries to inherit property from Mr. Two, they will tell him, those sons will say, you're not one of us, you're a son of Mr. One. V'heim yorshim oisoi bein shneim. If that suffix dies, so between the bonim of one and bonim of two, they will inherit him. So, but in that case, the Suffolk doesn't get anything. The Rabbonon that we saw in the Gemara, where it said Sov Rabbonon Kamedu Rav Mishashia, they took that case, which is a Mishnah later in this Masichta. The result of that was that the Suffolk gets nothing, and then we'll say superimposes that on question or diamond number two, where also there was a Suffolk and Bonim, and he says the opposite, meaning that in this case the Suffolk will inherit the properties of the mace, and the Bonim of Shimon, the Bonim of the Avim, they will get nothing. So just to go over what they're saying, when the Gemara says, in the case featured in the Tanaic source quoted from later in the Masichta, the Suffolk got nothing, the Bonim, though, yes, receiving. In our case, diamond number two, the Suffolk will inherit, and the Bonim will not get anything. This is what they, the Rabbanan, wanted to say to Rav Misharshia. The Gemara continues with further with elaboration on this. Hossam, in the Mishnah Daf Kufa Midbeis, Amri Lei, the brothers, the children of man one and the children of man two, in the diagram above where the double star was, in that case, those Bonim will tell the Suffolk, I see Raya Ushkol, you bring proof that you're the son of either one or two, and then you'll have a chance of getting something. But until you can bring proof, we can shove you off. Hacha, Omar Luhu. Here, in diamond number two, the Suffolk says, Aisu Raya Ushkolu, you bring proof, he says to the Bonim, that I am your brother. And we saw before how Rashi presented this. In that case, with the namely diamond number two, the Suffolk had a much stronger claim on Reuven's property. Either way you looked at things, the Suffolk had a claim either on all of it or at least on a portion of it. So once again, the Rabbonon, who were in the presence of Misharshia, wanted to parallel diamond number two to the Mishnah there later on Kuf Amud Beis. We continue in the Gemara, the inverted crown. Omar Lahu Rav Misharshia. Rav Misharshia says to them, Me dummy, how can you compare these cases? Hasam Inhu Vadai Ve'ihu Safek. In the Mishnah case of Kuf Amud Beis, the diagram above, they, when the Suffolk came to lay claim on the property of one, let us say, the sons were saying, they were known sons of Mr. One. Inhu is they are Vadai. When they lay claim, they're claiming from a standpoint of certainty. They know they know from whence they come. However, the Suffolk, he doesn't know for sure who he is, his father. Haha, in our case, Edi Suffolk, both are coming with a claim that lacks certainty to it. In our case, diamond number two, the Suffolk isn't saying for sure that he's the son of Reuven. He doesn't know for sure. And they, the Bonim, don't know for sure that this is their brother. So there's lack of parallel between the cases. Elo'i damyo the masnisin. If you want to compare one of these Suffolk claims, a claim to the Mishnah on Daf Kuf Amud Beis, if you want to set up a case that would be parallel, that where you have one side Vadai, one side arguing with certainty, L'chol Damya, it would be similar to the following case. This is diamond number three. L'safek u'bnei yavam shebo lachlok b'nichsei yavam gufei. The safek and the children of the yavam are coming to divide the estate of the yavam. The yavam, the surviving brother, he had his own children, and he died, leaving his sons, the b'nei yavam, and there is the safek. Before we go further, we just glance at Rashi. B'nichse yavam gufei, that's the case of the safek and the b'nei yavam laying claim to the yavam's properties. Hasa misukma masnisen, it's with this case we can set up the case of the Mishnah, or the principle of the Mishnah. Dehu lo yoresh o son, the safek will not inherit from the yavam's properties. The Amrile, the Yavam's own sons, will say, I see Ryoshko, you bring proof that you're one of us. Avol Bahi Deliel Shnehem Safek. But in the case of the Safek and the Bnei Yavam coming to inherit the Nichsei Misna, both sides were in doubt. Rashi continues with a point that will be very important as the Gemara goes on. So we continue in the Rashi. V'nira b'einai dahi monsa dekamodu lei. In case of diamond number two, the b'nei yavam told the safek that you have something, you have a portion of the properties. That's a portion of the Nichsei Misna. That we're all brothers and our father inherited his deceased brother. And now we're coming to divide the property of the deceased brother. You have a portion in that. So Rashi is referring to that here. He says, Dahi Monsa de Komodu Lei Shokil. That he takes off the top. Not only does he claim it, but they concede that he claimed all of the properties. They're saying he has a part of the properties. So over that section, there's no argument. The idach have a moment amuta besafek, the cholkin. The balance of the nichsei misna is the doubt. And that they divide. Who notel hachatzi? He, the safek, will take half of that balance. Ubein kulam hachatzi, the other sons, there might be several of them, they will take the other half of that balance. So at the end of the day, the safek will be getting more than half of the properties of the mace. So that if you were dealing, let us say, with a piece of property worth $90, so if we talk in value terms, there were two sons of the Yavam. So the two sons of the Yavam were saying to him, "Listen, $30, you're going to take off the top because there are three of us. If we count you as one of our brothers, there are two of us plus you, that's three. A third of the $90 of the Nifsei Misna you get off the top. That leaves $60 that is Momon Hamuta B'Safek. And with that, that would have to be divided. The $60 would be divided in half. So that would leave $30 for the Safek, not forgetting that he already received $30 that they had agreed upon. So he goes out of the picture with $60. The other $30 would then be divided amongst the two sons of the Yavam, each one getting $15. So that you have the Safek getting $60 and the other two ending up with $15 apiece. If you add up 2 times 15, plus the 60, there you get to the $90 original value. Now we turn back to the Gemara. We featured here case number 3, which we'll read in the Gemara text. Sofek and Bnei Avim Shavo Lachlok Benichsi Avim Gufei. We read this, of course, before. The Hossam Amri Le, in that case, they Bnei Yavam will tell the Sufek, I see Raya the Achuno at Ushkol. You bring a Raya that you are one of ours, you are one of us. Because in this case, in case number 3, they were coming to litigate over the property of the Yavam. And his sons knew for sure that they were his children. And therefore, their taina was a taina of vadai. The Safek is claiming he's one of them. He's coming simply with a taina that's a Safek. And as we said before, in such a case, so he will get nothing. You say in a case like that, Hamotzi mechavero olav haraya. Safek ubnei yavam, case number 4. The Safek and bnei yavam shabo lachloik. Benichse yavam. Lebosar de polig yavam benichse misna. So the Safek and the children of the Yavam are coming to litigate over the property of the Yavam after the Yavam had divided the properties of the deceased brother. Namely, we're looking at case number 1. Over there we saw the Safek and the Yavam dividing the property of the mace, and we said over that was Momen Amuta B'Safek. What we see here in case 4 in effect is a continuation of case 1. So in case 1, the Safek received 50% of the deceased's property. The Yavam received the other 50%. Now, the Safek is confronting the Bnei Yavam concerning the 50% of the deceased's property that the Yavam took. It's a type of, let's say, double dipping, if you will. The Safek already got 50% of that property. Now, and we're just repeating ourselves, now that Safek comes to confront the Bnei Yavam regarding the 50% of the deceased property that their father had taken. So that's what the Gemara means when it says, Shebo lachlo b'nichse Yavam lebosu depolig Yavam b'nichse misna. It's the 50% of the property that the Yavam had taken in the deceased's property. What are the claims? Bnei Yavam Amri. The sons of the Yavam say, I see Raya Dachuna Atushko. You bring a Raya that you're one of us. Obviously, in order for the Safek to claim the other 50% that their father had taken, he would have to be claiming that he is one of them. He is one of their brothers. Omar Luhu Safek. The Safek says to them, Monav Shaihu, either way you look at things, E Achulchon Ano, if I am your brother, Havuli Monso Bahadaihu, I want you have to give me at least a portion of that which your father took. The bar misno ano, and if I am the son of the deceased, your father shouldn't have taken anything in the first place. Ano is a havuli palgo to polag avuchan bahadoi, then you should give me that half.
that your father had taken when he divided with me. So the Suffolk seems to have a very strong claim to at least a portion of the property of the deceased that their father had taken. We have names that we've highlighted with a house marking, the names Rabbi Abba and Rabbi Yirmiyah. Rabbi Abba Omar Kom Dina. What does that mean, Rashi? Kom Dina. Achar Shinase Din Benichse Hameis. After the Nichse Hameis were originally divided and the Suffolk got his half, he can't now come and issue a new claim on those on that property. Umashu shoyel benichse hayavam, and that which he is requesting in the portion that the yavam received, Amri le, they can tell him, I see raya, you bring proof that you're one of us. Basically, that the suffix is a motzi mechavero. And then, hence, he would have to bring proof that he is a brother. That's Rabbi Abba's approach. In other words, that the Suffolk is out of the picture. In other words, he has no claim on that other half of the deceased's property that the Yavam took. Rabbi Yirmiyah Omar Hodar Dina. Rabbi Yirmiyah says, the din, the division of the property goes back to the beginning. What do we mean by that? So again, we look at Rashi, Hodar Dino, Umahadri Le Palgo Dinichsi Misna. They, the brothers, the sons of the Yavam, will either return half of the properties of the deceased, O polag kulhu nichsi b'shave, or they will divide all of the properties equally. So, as far as Rav Yirmiyah is concerned, everything everything goes back to the beginning. You have two choices based on the claims of the Suffolk. There's a Rashi that we should have looked at earlier, but it's not too late. Just a few lines up. I achuchon ano havuli monso gabaychu. This was the Suffolk laying claim to the Bnei Yavam on the half that their father had taken in the deceased properties. The I mishum deshakli ano palga benichse misna. And so that the Suffolk is saying, and if you're going to like argue against me, claiming that, well, you already got half the properties of the mace, claiming that I'm the son of the deceased, I have something to tell you, says the Suffolk. Mahadarno luchu hahu palga, I will return to you that half, v'nachlu kakol b'shove, and let's divide everything equally, namely the property of the deceased and the Yavam's property. Bein nichsei arishon, bein nichsei achron. You'll ask, well, why would someone do that? Why would someone, after having received half of the deceased estate, why would he re-pool that with the other sons of the Yavam? What interest would the Suffolk have in claiming that he's one of them, that he's one of their brothers? Rashi answers, Okegoin sheil nichsei hayavam merubin, the oviv mu'atin. Just imagine, to illustrate this, that the deceased brother had property worth $10. The yavam, he has property worth $1,000. And the Yavam left a couple sons, two sons. it would be very beneficial of the on the part of the suffek, if the deceased property was worth $10, to re-pool the $5 with the claim that I'm one of your brothers, I'm a brother with you guys, and then take the and then his then he would then divide with them property worth $1,000 plus the $10 amongst themselves, the suffek ending up with much more than he originally had. So that when you see this situation of his willingness to re-pool the property, that could make a lot of sense under those circumstances. So according to Rabbi Abba, the suffek has no claim to begin with, and according to Rabbi Yirmiyahu, the suffek has a claim. Either you give me back the half that your father got because I'm the son of the deceased, and if you're claiming I'm one of you, so then I'll be happy to re-pool everything in order to benefit as we just described. So according to Rabbi Abba, we can say that the suffek has no claim. According to Rabbi Yirmiyahu, the suffek has a claim. The Gemara now has a question. It's a long question. Lemo beplukto de admoin v'rabonon komifligi. In order to see the question, though, we're going to have to wait till the end of the long question before it comes to a head. Disnan, a Mishnah from Aseches Ksubis says, Misha holach minasayam, a person who owned property and he went abroad. And we're going to see shortly that his property is surrounded by other properties. He doesn't have access to the road. He has to cut through some surrounding property. So a person went abroad, the Ovdo Loi Derech Sodeo, and he lost the path. It was unclear where the path leading out of his field to the roads that were in the vicinity. So he lost his way out. It became unclear, it became overgrown, whatever. Admon Omar Yelech Biktsora. Admon says that there's an element of doubt here. He has a right to take the shortest path through the neighbor's field to get to the road. The Chachamim omrim yikach lo derech b'me'a mona o yifrach bi'avir. The Chachamim say to the landlocked individual, the property is locked amongst the other fields. He says, you either pay a lot of money. That's the idea of pay mea mona. So for our purposes, it means a lot of money, or fly in the air before the Wright brothers. So that would be a tough challenge to meet. V'havinon bo, and we look at this machlokas between Admon and the Chachamim, and we ask, the Rabbanan, according to the approach taken by the Rabbanan, Shapir Ko'omar Admon. Admon seems to be saying something of great validity. Now, the Rashi, at the second line from the bottom, says, Shapir Ko'omar Admon, the Kosalka Daita Shekifu Otom Echod Mikoru Choysov, the Omar Urche Gabehu. The thinking at this point is that the inner field owner is surrounded by fields on four sides, all owned by one person. So that it's for sure that the landlocked individual had a path through the outside fields owned by the second gentleman. Why would the Rabbonon then insist that the landlocked person pay for a path? He definitely had a path through one of the surrounding through one of the fields surrounding him. So the landlocked fellow has a definite claim against the owner of the surrounding fields. Why should he have to pay for a path to get out? V'omar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, we continue in the Gemara. Hocho b'may askinon, the case between Admon and the Chachamim, Kigon Shikifu Arba B'nei Odom Me'arba Ruchois. There are four fields surrounding him. Those four fields are owned by four different people.
Yehochi my time of the Admon, if they're owned by four different people, how can you explain Admon's point where he says he chooses the shortest way out?
Well, the owner of that field will say, your path wasn't through my field, it's through the next guy's field. And each one would push him off.
So how can you understand Admon if you accept this approach?
The Omar Rava explains, the Arba the Osu Mikoyach Arba, the Arba the Osu Mikoyach Had,
if there are four fields surrounding him that are owned by four people, or you've got four fields that are owned by four people, let me just say this again, Aleph and Beis are cases where there are four fields. The owners of those four fields came from having purchased from four original owners, or the four current owners may have purchased the four fields from a gentleman that owned all four and divided into four separate sections. But in either one of these cases where there are currently four owners, kulei alma lo pligi de matsu madchile, everyone agrees, including Admon, that any given owner can push him off, the landlocked fellow. Your path isn't by us, it's by the next guy. If this landlocked guy wants a path, he'll have to pay good money for it. No argument. Keep pligi. When do you see a machlokas between the Chachomim and Admon?
Bechad da'osi mikoyach arbo'o.
There's a landlocked fellow, and there are four fields surrounding him. Right now, those four fields are owned by one owner. But that one owner, he amassed his real estate by purchasing from four original owners of small parcels. He bought the current owner of the surrounding fields, bought four small parcels of land, in effect, forming a ring around the landlocked individual. So it's, as far as the litigation is concerned, there's a landlocked fellow, one fellow, who's contesting, or is arguing, is litigating against one fellow that owns the four fields around him.
Admon Sovar, Motsi Omarle, Admon feels that the landlocked fellow has a claim, Mikol Mokoyim Darki Gabohu.
My path is in one of these fields. You own all the fields around. My path is through one of them.
Rabbonon Savri, the Rabbonon who remove any claim from the landlocked fellow hold, the Omar Le, the owner of the surrounding fields, can say to the landlocked fellow, Shaskis,
if you keep quiet and we come to a settlement, out of court settlement, I'll sell you a path at a cheap rate.
Ve lo, if you insist on your claim that you definitely have a path through one of these fields,
Mahadarno Shtoro Lemarayu, I'll return
the deeds of the four properties I bought to their original owners, four separate people.
You'll have no chance in your claim against them because each one of them will be able to push you off.
So we just featured Admon's analysis and the Rabbonon's analysis.
What are we trying to do in this long question? To tie in these two points of analysis with Rabbi Abba and Rabbi Yirmiyahu from before.
Lema Rabbi Abba.
Rabbi Abba is the one that said that the Suffolk had no claim. He already received his half of the property of the deceased. That's it. He's out.
So we should say, can we say that Rabbi Abba, the Omar Kerabonon, that he would parallel, Rabbi Abba was an Amoira, he would fit into the scheme of thought presented by the Chachom, by the Rabbonon, that the landlocked fellow didn't have a claim, that he was on the weaker end of things. And Rabbi Yirmiyah, who said that the Suffolk had a Taina, he would go like Admon, that said that the gentleman that was Mesupik had a strong claim. So just like Rabbi Yirmiyah gives the Suffolk a claim against the Bnei Yavam in the Nichse Misna that their father had taken, we find that approach taken by Admon, giving the Suffolk a claim against the owner of the properties surrounding him. So should we say this? And by the way, this is not a comfortable situation for any Amora to be in. What we're suggesting in this question is that Rabbi Abba, who's an Amora, he fits in only to the Rabbon and not to Admon. And likewise, Rabbi Yirmiyah, he fits in only according to Admon and wouldn't fit into the Rabbonon's scheme of thinking. So to this, we respond. And again, the house markings highlight Rabbi Abba and then later Rabbi Yirmiyah. Notice the long answer marking, because as we said, this began as a question. Should we say that that these Amoroyim, each one fit in only to one of the Tanoim present? Omar loch Rabbi Abba, the Gemara continues, Rabbi Abba says back, Ano diamri afilu ke'admon. My thinking will conform to Admon as well. Ad kan lokumar Admon hosam. Admon said what he did. He said Yelich Biktzora, that the landlocked fellow had a claim. Ela mishum di omerle mi munafshach darki chad gaboch hu. He had what we call a tainas bori, a clear claim. His claim was a solid claim that whichever way you look at things right now, my path is in one of your fields. We're continuing at the top of Lamed Ches, Amud Aleph, in the middle of the line. Aval hacha, mi ika lameimar hachi. But in the case of the Safek and the Bnei Yavam, do you have either side with a solid claim like that? Rashi says at the second line from the top, Miko lemeimar hochi, holo yoda mai kotova mine. He, the Safek there, doesn't know exactly what he is claiming. I palga benichse misna, I monsa benichse yavam. Is he claiming the half of the deceased's property, or is he claiming a portion amongst the other sons of the Avam in the property of the Avam? Umikoach shtei tainis hu bo alehem. And the suffix in that case is coming with two claims. B'chol achas v'achas omrim lo havei rayin. And regarding each claim, they can respond, you bring a proof. So there, the Rabbi Abba explains that whereas Admon gives the Suffolk, the landlocked person, not knowing where his path is, but a strong claim that my path is in one of your properties without any question. In the case of the Suffolk and the Bnei Yavam, that Suffolk was coming with two claims, each of one was weak, where the other side, the Bnei Yavam, could say, oh, you're claiming that? Bring proof. The Gemara continues, second line from the top, Reb Yirmiyah, I say, Reb Yirmiyah Omar Loch, Reb Yirmiyah, who gave power to the Suffolk against the Bnei Yavam, he will say, Ano di Amri afilu l'Rabbonan. My opinion is something that even the Rabbonan, in the fellow who lost his path, could agree with. Ad kan lo kamri Rabbonan hosam.
the Rabbanan said what they did, that's only over there where we said that the suffake, the landlocked person loses out. Elo mishum diomer le yishaskis shaskis vilo mahadarna shtor le marayev lo motzis shtu yedino bahadayu. That's because the litigant standing opposite him, the owner of the surrounding properties, had a very strong counterclaim, saying, if you keep quiet, then fine, and if not, I'll return the deeds to the original owners, and against them you'll have no chance. That's for the Moxis and Shtu Dina Badai, you'll have no chance to argue, to speak up against them. So there, the Rabbonon say that the landlocked person has a weak claim and will have to pay for a path because the litigant against him had such a solid threat against him. Aval hocha miiko lemeimar hochi. But here, with regard to the Bnei Yavam, they don't have a way to threaten him, so to speak, as we saw by the owner of the surrounding properties. So as a result of that, Rabbi Yirmiyah feels comfortable in his position, giving the Suffolk a strong claim and not having to lose out to the claim of the Bnei Yavam. A new case, case number 5. Suffolk v'Yavam Shebo Lachlok Benifse Saba. We have a little diagram to illustrate this. There's a grandfather, Yankiv. He had two sons, Reuven and Shimon. Reuven died. The Suffolk, we don't know, he's the son of one of these two, of either Reuven or Shimon. He's, of course, the Suffolk, and Shimon, it's either his father or his uncle, are trying to divide or lay claim on the property of the grandfather of Yankiv. Suffolk Omar. The Suffolk says, Hi Gavra, on himself. He says, literally that man that's on himself. He says, I am Bar Misnahu. I am the son of the deceased. Upalgo Didi Hu. And half of the grandfather's properties belong to me, because a son takes the place of his father in the laws of inheritance, so that he represents Reuven. That's his claim. And as such, he gets half of the grandfather's property. Yavam Omar, At Baroi Didiat. The Yavam says, you are my son. Veleslach Velomidi. You have no claim to my father's property, your grandfather's property. A son inherits his father, not a grandson doesn't inherit the grandfather when there's a father around. Have Yavam Vadai. The Yavam has a definite claim on at least part of Yankiv's properties. The Suffolk. The Suffolk at best has only a doubtful claim. He might have nothing in it. He can't say that he has anything definite. The Ein Suffolk Motzi Midei Vadai. And that which is doubtful cannot take away from or win over someone that has a claim of certainty. Another case. Suffolk Ubnei Yavam Shebo Lachloik Benichse Sabon. Here, too, we have a little diagram. The same basic setup. However, we add to this diagram, Shimon has two sons. Before we go through the Gemara itself, let's take a look at what we've added underneath the chart. Once again, we're noting that the Suffolk and the Bnei Yavam are laying claim on the grandfather's property. The Suffolk is Moideh that half, say 3/6 of the property go to the Bnei Yavam. After all, the Suffolk will be claiming that he is the deceased, the son of the deceased. By saying that he is the son of the deceased, he is putting himself in Reuven's position, acknowledging that half of the property belongs to Shimon and, in this case, his sons. So the suffix is moida that 3/6 of the property go to them. Another point. What are the B'nai Yavam claiming? They're claiming that the suffix is one of them, is a brother with them. The B'nai Yavam, therefore, are claiming that Shimon had no, that is, Reuven had no children. You're one of us. So that Yankov's property went 100% to our father. Our father is gone. There are two of us, and you're one of us. You're one of us. So there are three brothers. So B'nai Yavam Moidim B'Shlish Yesh La Safek. Since there are only two, he represents a third. So that they're Moda, they're conceding that a third of Yankov's properties go to the Safek. A third, by the way, is 2/6. So that when you, before you even get to the point of controversy, there are points that they, that both litigants concede to. The suffix is mode that they have half. They are mode that the suffix has a third. So how much is left to argue over? So if you reduce it to the common denominator, half of the property is also 3/6. They get 3/6 because no one's arguing over that. The suffix gets 2/6. 2 and 3, that's 5/6. What's left to argue over? 1/6. Now that 1/6 then is going to be momen hamuto b'suffix. That's in doubt. So let's now look back into the Gemara. We're at diamond number 6, Safek ubnei Yavam, Shebo Lachlok b'nichsei Sabo. Safek Omar, Hahu Gavro, he says on himself, Bar Misnahu, I am the son of the deceased. Upalgo didihuan, 50% of Yankov's properties, of grandfather's properties, come to me. Ubnei Yavam Amri, Achuno At. Oh, before we go on with the B'nai Yavam, let's just point out, at that point that the suffix said, I am the son of the deceased, and I have half coming to me, the other half is coming to you. That's that I understand, you get half. U'B'nai Yavam Amri, Achuna At, U'monso Isloch Bahadon. The B'nai Yavam say, you are one of us, that Reuven didn't have any sons. So that you're not entitled to get 50% of Yankov's properties. You're one of us, and there are two of us, and is you, that makes three brothers. And therefore, Umonsa Yisloch Bahadon, a portion, which we explained before, was a third, that's coming to you. The Gemara continues. Palga de Kamoidi Lahu Shakli. 3/6 that the suffix is Moida, that goes to them, the B'nai Yavam. Tilsa de ka module shakal. The third, tilsa is a third, 2/6 that they, the B'nai Yavam or Moide, concede go to the suffix he takes. Posh lehu danka. There remains 1/6. That is the, that over that you have the argument. Have a moment amut of a suffix, the chokim. So that 1/6 and then would be divided. And 1/6 is made of 2/12. So the suffix would get 1/12. The other 12th would have to be divided between the two brothers, each one getting 1/24. A new case. Sabo v'yavam b'nichsei suffix. So you can use the, if you want to, use charts, you can refer to the charts we have already. You have the Saba, that's Yankov, and the Yavam is son, Shimon, are coming to argue over the properties of the Suffolk. The Suffolk in this case would, he dies.
the grandfather is going to claim that the Suffolk is not Shimon's son. He's the son of the other brother. And in the absence of Reuven having any children, and the Suffolk is dead now, so the grandfather, or Reuven's father, inherits. Shimon is claiming the Suffolk is his own son. And where and as such, the father inherits his son, not a grandfather. Another case, case number 8. Saba v'osaba v'sofek b'nichseyavam. That would be Yankiv. And the Sofek arguing over possession of Shimon's property. The Sofek is claiming that he is Shimon's son, hence entitled to all of that property. The Saba is claiming that you're not Shimon's son, you're Reuven's son. And right now we're contesting Shimon's property, and therefore it's mine. So each one is laying full claim on Shimon's property. The Suffolk claiming he's a son of Shimon, and Yankov claiming that the Suffolk is a son of Reuven. So in these cases 7 and 8, have a momon hamutal b'Suffolk v'cholkin. There's equal doubt over here, and as a result they split. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at G Markings. Let's just mention that you might want to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras. And in order to do so, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.